So this evening, let us welcome them. Hari Bol. We also have Mr. Ajay and Swati Piramal. Hari Bol. And several other distinguished guests. His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj requested me to give a brief introduction of His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj, who will be speaking this evening briefly for half an hour. And then of course tomorrow there is going to be a Sunday festival where he'll be speaking in more detail. His Holiness Giriraj Swami Maharaj joined ISKCON way back in the early 70s. And in 1969, Srila Prabhupada was preaching in America from 1965 onwards, and Giriraj Maharaj met him in Boston. In fact, the last time when he came here to Chowpatty, he explained in great detail the entire story, how he met Srila Prabhupada while searching for the spiritual path. Interestingly, for us here in Mumbai, he has a special significance because Prabhupada once made a statement that Mumbai is Giriraj and Giriraj is Mumbai. And Giriraj Maharaj assisted Srila Prabhupada by establishing ISKCON very strongly here in Mumbai. All through the 70s, early 70s, there was a lot of conflict going on at ISKCON Juhu land, and Giriraj Maharaj was personally assisting Srila Prabhupada in all of those intimate leelas. In fact, he is planning to come up with a book with that story in great detail. And significantly, we have several senior devotees here like Srinath Ji Prabhu, Krishna Chandra Prabhu and others who are very intimately connected with Giriraj Maharaj right from those days. And we are very happy that Maharaj is here this evening with us to explain the significance of the Sharad Purnima festival to all of us. Let us welcome him by loudly chanting Hari Bol, Hari Bol.
Hare Krishna. I feel very honored and privileged to be here tonight on this most auspicious occasion, in this most holy place, in this most august assembly. The celebration of Sharad Purnima is the celebration of Sri Krishna's Ras Lila, which is the most glorious and exalted of Krishna's pastimes. And in principle, one should not even try to understand this topic without first having studied the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and the first nine cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, which lead up to the 10th canto, which describes the Rasa Lila. So how to discuss this exalted and intimate subject, and that too with people of different degrees of background in the subject. So I will try to explain in my own way, and I pray that it will be comprehensible and helpful. The Sarat season is the autumn season, and Purnima is the full moon night. So it is considered the most beautiful moonlit night of the year. Even the Taj Mahal is considered most beautiful in the moonlight of Sharat Purnima. And Lord Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Satchidananda Vigraha, he has an eternal, blissful, spiritual form. He considered the Sarat Purnima to be the most appropriate occasion for playing on his flute and sending a message through the song of his flute to his best devotees, the gopis, or cowherd maidens of Vrindavan, that they should come and meet him in the forest of Vrindavan and serve him. So every soul, every living entity is by nature the eternal servant of Krishna. And we are all meant to be attracted by Krishna, to serve him. It is our natural constitutional position to serve Krishna in ecstatic love. And that eternal love that is within us is covered in the conditioned state. And the process of bhakti yoga is the process of removing that covering and allowing our natural love for Krishna to come forth. And the process, the main process by which the covering is removed is chanting and hearing about Krishna, especially chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And if we chant and hear purely, we can awaken our dormant love for Krishna. And we can enter into Krishna's pastimes just like the gopis. This is not a mythological story or fiction. It's not a fable. And it's not only a report of some historical events, but it's a revelation of what life with Krishna is. What life the purified soul can experience. And in fact, Krishna comes into the world in a human-like form to give special mercy to the conditioned souls by showing them what life with him is like. So we can also be attracted by his beauty and qualities and activities with his devotees. So we can also aspire to enter that life. Just like someone born in America has not been to India, but they might see pictures and books and think, oh, this is very interesting. Or they might have friends or family who've been to India and told them about their experiences, and they, oh, I would also like to go to India. So even without experiencing something, by hearing about it, we can develop a desire to experience it. So in the same way, by hearing about Krishna and his loving affairs with his pure devotees, we can also develop a desire to experience that life with Krishna. So Krishna played upon his flute, and the sound of the flute entered the ears of the gopis and conveyed Krishna's message to them that he wanted them to come and meet him in the forest of Vrindavan. And they did. Although, according to Vedic culture, a girl would not leave home at night unescorted, but hearing the call of Krishna, they just left everything and went. And when they came to Krishna, Krishna asked them, why have you come? Now, of course, he should have known why they came. But still he asked, why have you come? And the gopis became very bashful. I mean, what were they supposed to say? So very shyly they started looking down, and Krishna said, oh, maybe you have come to see the beauty of the Vrindavan forest. They're just looking, you know, looking here and there, not knowing how to respond to Krishna. He said, oh, I think you must have come to see the beautiful trees in the Vrindavan forest, the full moon. And then Krishna said, actually, it is the duty of chaste ladies to always be under the protection of their parents, or if they're married, under the protection of their husbands and in-laws. So now you have seen the beauty of the Vrindavan forest, you should return home. Your parents and husbands must be worried about you. So the gopis replied that you have given us very good instructions that we should be chaste girls and go home. But actually, you are the supreme soul of all souls. Every soul is part and parcel of you. So we belong to you. We don't belong to anyone else. But you have given us very good instructions, very good shiksha. So you are our guru. And as our guru, we must worship you. We want to do guru puja. So we will go home as you have instructed us. But before that, because you have given us such good instructions, as our guru, we must worship our guru, and then we will go home. So Krishna understood the hearts of the gopis. He knew from the beginning, of course. And so he enjoyed pastimes with them by the banks of the Yamuna River. And he dealt with them in such a perfect way. This is what God can do. He can deal with each individual in such a perfect way that each gopi thought that Krishna loves her more than anyone else. That she has Krishna under her control. So Krishna he thought that it would be, Krishna does not like, of course this is all on a transcendental platform, but still there are lessons for us. And so Krishna does not like any devotee to feel proud. And to humble the gopis who felt transcendental pride in Krishna's attention and affection, he disappeared. He disappeared, and all the gopis were plunged into deep feelings of separation. And so they began to search the forest of Vrindavan for him. They could not find him. But they did find some footprints. They found Krishna's footprints, and they found, along with Krishna's footprints, another pair of footprints, whom they deduced were the footprints of Krishna's favorite gopi. And although the name of Radha is not mentioned explicitly, but it is hinted at, that this gopi worshipped Govinda better than all the rest of us. And eventually Krishna left that gopi also, and she was also plunged into great feelings of separation. And when the gopis came across that gopi, even though there otherwise was some rivalry, but when they came across her and found her pitiful plight, transcendental, but from a certain point of view, pitiful plight, they felt sympathetic to her. And this is also a very important feature of this pastime, that earlier the gopis were acting as individuals. Each one thought, oh, Krishna is with me alone. Krishna loves me the most. His Holiness Niranjan Swami Maharaj Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So before Krishna left them, each gopi was thinking, no, Krishna is mine. Krishna loves me the most. But Krishna wanted all the gopis to be united in their feelings of love for him and in their friendship with each other. And by removing himself from them and putting them in separation, they became humble. And then, especially when they found Srimati Radharani in such a intense state of separation, they felt sympathy for her. And they gave up all their sectarian feelings of being separate. And this was what Krishna wanted. He wanted to bring them all together. Because he could enjoy the rasa dance properly only with all of them together, united. So, but still, so they were all together now, but he was still missing. And after looking and looking, they concluded that they cannot find Krishna. Krishna will only be found by them if he wants to be found by them. And they thought, how can we attract Krishna's attention? How can we attract Krishna's mercy? And they concluded by Sankirtan, by chanting together the names and glories of Krishna. So they went back to the Yamuna River, where Krishna had first called them with his flute, and they began to sing their hearts out to him with great feeling, with great emotion. That is Sankirtan, Prem Sankirtan. That Sankirtan will attract Krishna. And after hearing the gopis' ecstatic, heartfelt prayers for him to return to them, he came. Now, why were they so eager that he should return to them? Because the gopis have pure love for Krishna. They have no desire other than Krishna's happiness. There's no selfishness in their desires. But they knew within themselves that Krishna can only be happy, or he can experience the greatest happiness only in their company. So not for their personal happiness did they want to be with Krishna, but for Krishna's happiness. And because devotees' perception of happiness is through Krishna's happiness, naturally they'll feel happy when Krishna is happy, but their motive was to make Krishna happy. So, hearing their heartfelt cries, their Sankirtan, Krishna returned. And the gopis felt as if their lives had returned into their bodies. It was as if they had been dead, and now they had come to life. But even though they were happy that Krishna had come, they harbored some question about Krishna's behavior, because they had left everything in the dead of night to meet him and serve him and please him, and he had abandoned them. So they thought, is this a proper way for him to reciprocate their love? But the gopis were so intelligent and tactful that they did not want to accuse Krishna directly, but they wanted to develop a line of questioning that would bring Krishna himself to admit his fault. So they said to him, because they had already accepted him as their guru, that we have a question to place before you. There are different categories of lovers. There are those who reciprocate only with those who love them. Like if someone loves me, then I will love them. Otherwise, they don't. That's one category. The other category, they will love someone whether that person loves them or not, whether the person is indifferent to them, or even if the person is inimical to them. And then there's another category that doesn't reciprocate with anyone, whether someone loves them or not. So logically, these are the only possibilities. So someone reciprocates, whether you reciprocate or not. Someone doesn't reciprocate, whether you reciprocate or not. And someone reciprocates only if you reciprocate. So the gopis said, please tell us which of these is the best. So Krishna said that those who love others only if the others love them, they are like businessmen. They only give something if they get something in return. That is not real friendship, and that is not true dharma. And those who love others, whether the others love them or not, are the best. And there are two categories of those. Those who are affectionate, like parents, and others. So an affectionate parent will love his or her own children. That's natural because there's a relationship. And a very open-hearted, broad-minded person will love the children of others almost like he would love his own child, and extend care and protection almost as he or she would to his or her own child. But the other category is even better than those who are affectionate like parents, and those are the devotees, pure devotees. A pure devotee can love you more than your own parent. Can love you better than your own parent. And they have no discrimination on the basis of the body. They want to give their mercy, their love, their mercy to everyone without discrimination. So they're the best. And even if others don't reciprocate, they continue to give them love. Sometimes it happens a disciple will go away, but the guru still wants to help the disciple. Sometimes disciples even become antagonistic, but the guru remains sympathetic to the disciple and wants to help. And then the third category, they don't love anyone. Whether you love them or not, they don't love you. And the gopis were thinking that Krishna's in that category. Because they loved him, and he didn't reciprocate, so he couldn't be in the first category of those who love only those who love them. And he's definitely not in the second category of loving someone, even if they don't love him. So he has to be in the third category of someone who doesn't love even someone who loves him. So Krishna explained that in this category, there are subdivisions. There's the Atmarama. He doesn't reciprocate because he's fully self-satisfied. He has nothing to gain or lose from anyone. He's satisfied within himself, like a type of sage. Then there's Aptakama. Aptakama means he has desires, but they're already satisfied. Like, okay, I'd like to eat, but if I've already eaten more than enough, which has been the pattern these last few days, then after eating such a huge meal cooked by expert cooks, if someone offers me something more to eat, I won't reciprocate because I'm not hungry anymore. So that's aptakama. And then there's akritagya, ungrateful, that even though someone serves you and loves you, you're ungrateful and you don't reciprocate. So the gopis were thinking, okay, this is where Krishna fits. You know, we loved him, we sacrificed everything for him, we came to him when he called us, and he's so ungrateful he didn't reciprocate. He left us, abandoned us, went away. And then the fourth category is even worse. Ungrateful means you don't appreciate, but the fourth category, Guru Druhi, it means like you're envious. Ungrateful means you just don't care. But envious, that's even worse. You turn against the person who has loved you. But Krishna said, actually, I'm not in any of these categories. Just when the gopis thought they had him, where they wanted him, he said, actually, I don't belong to any of these categories. Because although apparently I did not reciprocate with you, but internally I was reciprocating with you, because I know that your only desire, your heart's only desire, is to love me. And by disappearing from you, I intensified your love for me, which was actually your heart's deepest desire. So I did reciprocate with you. And although you thought that I left you, but I was very near to you all the time. And I was watching you and appreciating your love for me. But our acharyas have analyzed this statement of Krishna's and stated that it's not true, because the nature of the gopi's love is that it's always increasing. He doesn't have to disappear from them for their love to increase, but it is by nature always increasing to the highest degree. So what then was the reason that Krishna disappeared? The reason was that Krishna wanted to show the supreme love of the gopis for him. And that was brought out in separation. And in particularly, he wanted to show the love of Srimati Radharani for him, because her feelings of separation were the most intense. So he really did it to glorify the gopis and their love for him. And that, but that's, Krishna didn't say that to them, but that's what our acharyas tell us. But what Krishna said to them is that actually what you are thinking about me is true. I cannot reciprocate your love for me, because you have given up your families, your parents, your husbands, your children, your homes, your prestige. You've given up everything for me, which I cannot do for you. You've given up everything for me, but I haven't done that for you. I'm very careful. I keep my relationship with my parents intact, and I have so many devotees, my cowherd boyfriends, I have my relationships with them, and my servants, I have my relationships with them, and then aspiring devotees, sadhakas, I even give myself to them, I reciprocate with them. So actually, it's true. I cannot reciprocate your love for me. Even if I had a prolonged life of Brahma. Therefore, you know, let your own glorious deeds be your own compensation. I cannot repay my debt to you. So when the gopis heard these words from Krishna, they thought, Krishna has defeated us, because he has admitted that we have defeated him, but we could not admit that he defeated us. So he has defeated us. So in this sublime mood of mutual, of love, of pure love and respect and appreciation, Krishna and the gopis entered into the rasa dance. And it is said that, that in order to experience the gopi's love for him, which was beyond his capacity, that Krishna came again as Lord Chaitanya, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, to experience that love. So this is a very sublime topic, very high topic. It's not even possible for us to... We're just standing on the shore. We can't even put the tip of our toe in a wave of that ocean. But still we get a sense of the beauty of those relationships, so that we can try to purify ourselves to be able to serve Krishna in the mood of pure love. And we can also take lessons how we can live as devotees, as servants of Krishna here, feeling humble, feeling friendship for each other, and singing the glories of Krishna together for Krishna's pleasure, and in that way attracting Krishna's attention and favor. And that's the mood that His Holiness Radhanath Swami and all devotees, followers of Srila Prabhupada in the Sankirtan movement are trying to encourage in our association. And so I'm happy to be here where that mood is so prevalent, and I hope in your association that mood will come forth in me. Hare Krishna.